As we have been telling you, Senate Republican President Len Fasano, who has been a strong leader, is with us this morning to talk about Friday's dramatic, and I guess that's underlined, dramatic events when the Republican budget was passed in both the Senate and House, thanks to the defection of three Senate Democrats. Senator, good morning, good morning, good morning.
Good morning, Senator, and congratulations, by the way.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you guys very much. It took a lot of hard work from my staff to put together this budget that I think enticed many of the Democrats on the other side to think a few times before they pushed the button.
It seems, Senator, that even the Democrats were surprised by the votes by Senators Doyle, Hartley, and Schlossberg, particularly when Senator Doyle started out. What was your reaction at that moment when you were in the chamber and you heard Senator Doyle speak?
Well, we have a tradition, and the tradition is that as a matter of great importance concludes on the Senate floor, Senator Witkos would start to conclude, and then Senator Duff, and then myself, and then Senator Looney, and that would be the end of the discussion, and that's just protocol in the chamber for years in terms of that order. After I spoke, Senator Doyle got up, which was out of decorum, if you would, for the Senate. And when I saw him stand up, I was concerned of what he was going to say, and obviously got my attention, which meant something unusual was about to happen. And then as I listened to him speak and try to watch him parcel his words, it became clear to me which way he was going. And I figured once he said something, and I figured as he was talking, he was going to vote in favor of this, I assumed that he would have some support. And so when Gail Schlossberg got up next, it became apparent to me that the three of them were going to vote for our budget. But as I said, it was the decorum in the Senate that went out of character that I think started to at least make me think we had a chance of passing our budget.
Say, you know something, Senator, don't ask me why, but I just had a gut feeling the three of them were going to do something. And the big question is now, and people, you know, are calling us, they're calling, you know, they really want the governor to sign this. And I can't believe that he's not going to sign it. I really can't.
So let's talk about a couple of things. One is that in hindsight, I think you're right. It makes sense that they voted for it. They had one request of leadership when they voted for the CBAC deal. And that request was, if we vote for the CBAC deal, you promise us you're going to put in these structural changes. And they had like 12 of them, I would argue 10 of which were their key items. And none of those 10 appeared in the Democratic budget. And I think that they made it clear they would not vote for the Democratic budget unless it was in there. We had all of theirs in ours, not only because we believe in the same things they do in terms of structural change, but also because they're really good ideas and they should be in anybody's budget. So that was one thing that enticed them. As far as what we're battling and we'll start to battle today, frankly, is the total misconception that the Democrats are trying to spin on our budget. They're putting out false narratives to try to get unions across the state, not like the Republican budget, and they're being very, I'm going to say it frankly, they're lying about what the Republican budget does and does not do. I'm going to straighten that out today because the inaccuracy in their statements are appalling, understandable because they're scared, but because they're losing this battle, but they're appalling that they would outright lie. I'm not talking about elected Democrats, please. I'm talking about the base and SEIU who are out there, and President Herbst, who's out there. You know, the things that they're saying are frankly untrue, and we'll be combating that today.
Well, what is President Herbst of UConn saying?
Well, she's arguing that this is going to destroy UConn. She's arguing that, you know, this is going to be UConn is the top of this and top of that, and what we're doing is really gutting UConn, and that's far from the truth. money for UConn is still in the general obligation bonds. We've asked for some things, which have been, look, when a professor is making over $100,000 a year, that you pick up the fringe benefits over $100,000, because we can't control their salaries and we pay for the fringe benefits. And we're saying that when it gets up there, you have to help share in some of that cost. Well, she doesn't like that. Well, you know, you can't keep coming to us as a piggy bank, and we're going to be cutting seniors, and we're going to be cutting those people who need help with mental addiction and drug addiction. And we can't sit there and say we can be everything to everybody. We need to get control of our spending. UConn is one of those places that we need to get control. We're asking professors to take on one more caseload. They take on two, maybe three at the most. We're saying just take on one more while we go through this tough time, which means we don't have to have as many teacher's assistants. Those are types of common sense things that we need to do. You know, we have to look at our regional campuses to determine the viability of some of these things. We can't be every place and can't be everything to everybody, not when we're telling towns you have to raise, or under the Democrats' budget, you have to raise property taxes. And we're telling towns you're not going to have much money for municipal education, local education, but we're not going to ever look at UConn. I mean, come on, we got to be fair on this stuff. You know, you want to talk, they give free tuition. You want to talk about giving free tuition? Let's at least index it to a payroll. So those folks who are making, you know, $50,000, $60,000 working for UConn, you know, you want a discussion about them having tuition-free UConn, we could have that discussion. But for those making over X, pick a number, like everybody else in life, we got to figure out how we're going to pay for our kids' college tuition. We can't just say, well, you know, we're going to send our kids to UConn free. It's something that we have to look at and have a discussion. It's just because the state is where the state is. You know, if we had a booming economy, cash flow in our state, that solves all problems. But when we have a pinch, we got to get serious and start closing some gaps.
Do you think that it can happen with the people saying, look, we can't pay anymore? Do you think the governor will sign it, or is he just going to say, I'm not signing the budget?
Look, I think the governor is a smart man. We may disagree, but I think the governor is a smart man. I think he's got time to make a decision on whether to veto this. I don't suspect he's going to veto it right away. I don't see an upside to him or to state or anything in vetoing this right away. What I do see an upside is if he wants to veto it, as he says he's going to veto it, and he pulls everybody in a room and he says, look, this is where we are. Now, Democrats, you got to start listening to the Republicans, because apparently they have some sway, which is what we've always said. When during these negotiations, I have told you guys when I've been on your show that we talk, but they're not really listening. They want to do what they want to do. Well, now they got to listen. They got to do some of the things we've asked them to do. They would go into these meetings, say how we walked out of the meeting when in actuality they had no intention of doing any of the suggestions. Well, now I think we got their attention. So I think these negotiations now have a different dynamic to it, and I think the governor understands that, and I think he's going to call everybody in. At least I hope he does. If he were to veto this, I think he boxes the Democrats into a position they don't want to be in, and that position is you now have to override the governor's veto. If not, you are responsible for the draconian cuts the governor will put in on October 1st. You know, what they had said to us, when they thought they were going to get their budget passed because they had the numbers, they said, Republicans, you may not like our budget, you may hate our budget, but let me tell you this. If you don't vote for our budget, you are voting for the governor's October disaster. That's essentially what they said on the floor. That's essentially what they've said in the paper and press conferences. Well, now the same is true. Just because it's a Republican budget doesn't mean the argument is any less important or any less substantive. If you don't vote to override the governor's veto, well, you have endorsed the October budget that the governor wants to put through that everyone thinks is going to hurt a lot of people. So they've made the argument for us, and they got to live by the argument that they presented. It's a tough position for them to be in.
Senator, final question, running out of time. Is there a meeting today? Are you meeting with leaders from the other side?
No, I think the governor wanted everyone to go home and sort of relax. It was a tough, stressful week for everybody. And I think that perhaps we'll hear from the governor's office today to call us in on Tuesday or to get some dates, but we have to move very, very quickly. So I think that nothing is happening today. I think it's sort of a regrouping weekend and then start to discuss dates on Monday.
Senator, you don't know how pleased we are that you have been with Dan and myself so many times. And thank you again for what you have done and what the people, I hope, can expect.
Well, thank you guys for having me on. It certainly helps to get the message across.
Thanks, Senator. Have a good day.